Hello, welcome to Coffee with Kuda. I'm your host, Kuda, and today my guest is Garen Holdsworth, the Managing Director of MateCon Construction. So, Garen's been a while since we actually properly caught up.
Yes, it has.
Last in your chapter, you were doing demo and civil.
That's correct.
So, what's MateCon? What's the vision and what's happening now?
Yeah, so MateCon's a bit of an aspiration for myself. It's been a long time coming. A lot of my mates have been saying it should have happened sooner. But really, MateCon's a structural company under an open builder's license. I think we've known for a while that the industry needed a bit of change.
Mm-hmm.
So the way, look, I mean, I'm no visionary, but the way I see the industry going is, instead of there being a builder managing multiple trades, the trades actually manage themselves under an umbrella company, that being the developer.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's not for everyone. A developer may not want that risk, but there are developers that are keen on that risk, and we think that that's a viable business for us. So what MateCon really is it's a structural business.
Mm-hmm.
We come in, we do form, steel, concrete, and we focus primarily on that. Get it all the way to the top and finish off for other trades to come in behind us.
Yeah.
We are aligning ourselves with developers that see that vision. Obviously, there's savings in it, and there's obviously efficiencies in it, because now there's a business purely isolating the market of structure. That's all we want to do.
Yeah.
We got our own engineer, and we've got a lot of experience in the trade, so it's exciting times. And I think there's a bit of a shuffling in the market, if you want to call it. There's a few people getting a bit interested in what it is that we're doing, but yeah.
Yeah, well, it's hard at the moment, right? And it's been hard for, I don't know, it's coming on 2 years now, really, where there's not a huge market of builders, especially when you go over 20 mil, or you're in that 50 mil to 100 mil market.
100%.
Right. And because of that, supply and demand, the rule, right?
Yeah.
With high demand, the supply just
reduces
and the prices go up.
I agree with the statement there on, like, there is a lack of builders. Hutchies has owned the market for as long as I can remember in Queensland. And then obviously Multiplex have come in, and you've got Archon. You've got a few other players in that market, but there's only really maybe three major players in Queensland.
Yeah.
And Mirvac are self, you can't really have Mirvac in the same conversation, because they run their own developments and their own construction. So,
yeah.
Which leaves you with, like you say, a market that doesn't have a lot of builders in it. And then further to that, you get like you've mentioned, 2 years of real pressure in the market. It sort of isolates those builders into a monopoly where, you know, they trying to win work, because the developers' feasibilities need it at a certain number, which then adds pressure to the trades below that. And that's a natural cycle. I think that's happened in the past. Speaking to guys that have been through that GFC, they'll tell you that it was a cycle similar to this during that time. Like, they had to win, they had to keep the beast moving, and unfortunately the subbies did the same. That, you know, that everyone's fighting for that little crumb.
So. Yeah, and I imagine you don't want to get caught up in that cycle.
No.
And you just want to do a set number of jobs and try and keep it at a healthy margin.
Correct. I think that this is the market where relationships are going to be the most. Relationships have always been important, but I think this is a market where, you know, like, you can get found out real quick. If you don't know what you're doing and you don't have a goal or a core in your business or on what your values are.
Yeah.
At MateCon, all we want to do is value ourselves and back ourselves into what it is that we do. So that, I think we have. I back myself into any structure in Queensland, if not in Australia. So that's fun. It's the situation where the unknowns. So I don't know the developer until I know the developer. So there's a relationship there that I want to build. And if that developer treats me in the same way, or treats me in a business realm, so in other words, let's do business, let's make money together, that's where the selective market is for us. We want to choose our developers very carefully. We don't want to be running 10, 20 jobs a year. We want to be doing anywhere between 1 to 3. We're a small business, low overheads. But that's the way we like it. I don't need the stress. I don't need to be chasing all the big stuff. I just want to be chasing the things that, I obviously want to have my name to, but also I want to have a relationship with.
Yeah, well, it's the age-old saying, right? You don't really... It's quality over quantity.
That's correct.
Like, or the 80-20. Right? You're not going to make much more money by doing a lot of the work.
No.
It's going to be more stress, and you're probably going to make the same amount of money.
That's correct.
It's picking the right projects and picking the right work that's actually going to be where you're going to add the value.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But there's enough work out there. I mean, I think the market's stabilizing. Yeah, look, there's always going to be fear in the market. You can't change that. But there's a lot of guys there that are very excited about the next 2, 3, 4 years. There's a natural demand, like you've already discussed, the demand being... there is a housing shortage currently in Australia. And we can't stop that because Australia does have a lot to offer to the world, and there's a lot of people that want to be here and want to come into the country. So these are all great scenarios. So I look at it in an optimism that Australia has a lot to offer. People want to come here. Yeah, the housing affordability is an issue, and yeah, inflation's an issue, and all these things are issues that naturally people want to be pessimistic and say, oh, we got all these issues, but... In my head, I go, well, hang on, there's so many positives. Like, we do have a lot of land. Like, just because you're not near the city doesn't mean that you can't own. Like, people think, I need to own a home in the city. It's like, okay, fair enough. But if you want to live there, you need to be paying for what it's worth. Yeah. I think there's a lot of opportunity in regional, regional Queensland, regional Victoria, regional New South Wales. And I think there's a natural ability for Australia to offer more land and more housing and more construction, whereas other countries just don't have that. Like, you can't be building large-scale developments in France because there's just no land space. So Australia still is in its early stages. I think this is just a little bit of a hurdle, but the optimism in me thinks that this is the perfect scenario.
Yeah, my only concern, right, is how do we keep up with it?
Yeah,
well, because we don't... The skill shortage is
a massive skill
it's
shortage.
It's massive. Yeah. The amount of knowledgeable people walking around there, not a lot of them, and that's just given because of all the work that's been happening over the last few years and the high demand and the high number of projects. Everyone has had to be almost on an accelerated program. And I think we're at the tail end of that, where I don't think there's much more labor that we can get. And there's a lot more work that we need to do. How do we attack it?
Well, there's two things happening there.
Yeah.
One is you've got government work, infrastructure, large-scale projects happening.
The hospitals, yeah.
Correct. So, and that has a requirements or demand on our labor, and a lot of that labor has shifted across to that work, which is fair. I mean, there's a need for this stuff as we grow. But then in terms of the housing shortage, you are right. Like, there was a period there where you could have whoever you wanted in your team, and small mistakes here and there, you wouldn't, you would feel it, but you wouldn't really worry about it. Whereas now, because it's such a cutthroat market, every percentage matters. So, people are I'm finding, at least in this market, a lot of people are scared of making big decisions. And these decisions cost... not only them, but also the person on the receiving end, money and percentages. Yeah. So that's where you are correct. There is a shortage of good tradesmen, but also good admin within our industry that can make these big decisions and hard decisions, because that's what we need. We need guys that are leaders in this current market. So,
you've touched on a point that I like and I'm really big on. What's your take on decision making?
Oh man, yeah. Look, I'm.
What's your philosophy on it?
Well, I'm a, look, I'm not an expert at everything. I'm very good at one or two things in my industry, and I own that.
Yeah.
If I don't know something, I'm not going to sit there and pretend I know it. That's half the problem with decision makers, is they want to know, but they're going to put it on themselves to make that decision. It's like, no, mate, there's a whole heap of people within your team that you can rely on to help you make the right decision. So what inevitably happens is, my philosophy is, if I don't know something, I'm not going to make a decision on it, and I'll let you know as soon as the question's asked. Yeah. Because why? Because it's going to cost you money. If you're saying to me, Garen, I need this done, you know, can you do it?
Yeah.
And I turn around and say, yes, I can. Immediately, your mind has shifted to, no, Garen's got this. No, in my head, I'm like, oh, I don't know. I don't have this. Like, I'm going to have to work this out. So the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks or however long it takes to actually get the answer that I gave you across the line has costed you money, but it's also cost me. So decision-making needs to be a lot quicker. It needs to be more precise and honest. Honesty is the big thing. Like, I don't know, Kuda, but what I will do is I'll work with you to find out.
Yeah.
Now, you may go, oh, I was expecting Garen to know that, but okay, that's fine. At least now we're in the same boat. We're all in the same. Okay, this is all good. We're going to work it out together. Decision making needs to be honest, and you need to be able to own up to the fact that it's okay not to know something, but it's okay if you do know something to make that decision on the spot. Because if you do know it, back yourself. Like, the industry needs leaders, and that's what leaders do. They back themselves.
It is, and it's the natural progression of the male ego, right?
I want to know everything.
We all sit in meetings, and everyone pretends that they know what's going on, and we have conversations going round in circles, and probably everyone understands 30% of the conversation, because no one's sat there and said, "I don't know what's going on." Right? I just don't know what's going on.
Like, an acronym was said. Like, someone said, ANDB. You're like, yeah, I know what that is.
Yeah. I'll figure it out.
Nobody knows what it is.
And yeah, Everyone wants to ask the question, but no one wants to put themselves out there and just guys, I don't know what's happening. Exactly. And then everyone's just like, yeah. So I like that honesty. I think that's something that just needs to progress. Yes. It's always owning the fact that you don't know.
That's right.
It saves everyone time, and it saves everyone on the headaches of what comes with it.
Mm.
I like also hasty decision making. I read this book, I don't know which one now, where one of the guys in the US government says, if you make a decision after you have 60% of the information, you've made the decision too late.
Mm.
Right.
Wow.
It's between 30 and 60% of the information. Yeah. That's when you need to make a call on it.
Okay.
So ask the right questions.
Yes.
And once you've got about 60% of the information, make a call.
Yeah.
If you make it after that, it's too late and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I try and implement some of that, try and get as much information as I can, but not waste time trying to be 100% certain, because probably by the time you become 100% certain,
it's too late.
Yeah, like, it's probably going to cost you more.
But you'd have, like, I mean, if I asked you a question, like, you would have, you know, 30% of that information
in your head.
In your head already.
Yeah.
And then the perception of that is, okay, am I in the right? Do I have the right? So that's you, all right? That's, yeah, you, like, you're a leader of your business. So you'll sit there and say, I got 30% of this down pat. At that stage, you may go, yep, I can make this call, because I know that once I've made the call, I can go back to my team and I can make up the rest of that 70% to, you know, 60%.
Yeah.
That is where I 100% agree with decision making. Like, you need to back your, I'm not having meetings with, you know, let's say I'm having a meeting with a contract administrator, all right? Now, I don't expect that contract administrator to make all the decisions within that contract. You know, like, it's not his business to make those calls. So I know he needs to, but I always ask the question, why are you then in this departures meeting without the person that can make those calls with you? Because it's wasting, not only wasting my time, and this is what you're getting at, is the hasty decisions that need to be made. I now have to wait for you to come back to me. So this is, let's say, 3 days, 4 days from now. Like, it could have been done right here, right now.
Right now. And it's, well, this then comes with empowering your staff, right?
Yeah.
Or empowering your team,
yeah.
Right? Because all that would need to happen then is that CA or whoever's in there, you go, you brief whoever you need to brief.
Mm.
This is the situation. Mm. These are the important points.
Yeah.
What decision do you want to get out of this?
Yeah.
Or what's the outcome you want to get out of this?
Yeah.
What are my parameters? So that they can actually go and make the call there because
yeah.
they know what they're working to.
Yeah.
There's nothing as frustrating as just presenting a problem, right?
And no solution. Right. Happens way too often in this industry at the moment.
Because there's always going to be a problem.
Yeah, but the solution, like you're saying, the hasty decision on the solution is there. Like, he's got the tools. Like, you know what I mean? The problem is that the CA may have the tools and may go, yeah, that's fair and reasonable. Like we can remove that or we can add it or whatever the case may be. But again, it goes back to it's not his place to make that call. And that's where I always ask the CA, like, if you knew that this was going to be back and forward and then the procedure, because a lot of these guys have their procedures, the procedure requires you to take this information back to the director. Why didn't we just have the director here? Like, why didn't we have the decision maker in the same room so that, I'm sitting here with you.
Yeah.
Like, I've got no issue sitting here with you. Because why? Because I want to get this deal across the line. I'm not here to pretend like this doesn't matter to me. I hate the fact that people make it out as, that doesn't matter to me. I've got enough work. It's like, no, mate, it matters to you because that's why you've got someone in the room with me. So just be there for 15 minutes. Run through all the high level discussions. Like, if there's some clauses there that you're not happy with, sit down. Let's have it out for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Once you're done, all the rest of it is just simple. Your CA can do the rest.
Yeah, and I had that's a good point because I interviewed Peter Ward, right, on Coffee with Kuda.
Yeah, how did that go?
It was great because he said something that stuck with me. Well, and it actually made sense.
Okay.
Right. It's the industry is working from a place of fear, right? Instead of a place of what success. It's, well, his words were, we're working from a place of what does failure look like instead of what does success look like.
Jeez, it's a big statement.
It is. And it's a very important outlook, right? Because as soon as you start losing money or as soon as you start losing, all you start seeing in your head is what else can I lose, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if I do everything right or if I apply myself and work towards the goal, this is what it looks like if it becomes successful, or this is what success is going to look like, right? And I think that's really where we're getting stuck, right? There's always going to be risk in everything we do.
There's risk in everything, yeah.
As long as you understand what the risk is, you can quantify it, which in this market, what's worrying me is everyone's throwing the word risk around, right?
Mm.
Can you quantify the risk? Can you actually name the risk? Can we mitigate it?
Mm.
No, there's risk and this is my number.
Yes.
Right. What's the actual risk? And how did you come to that number? Or are you just saying, well, you know, when COVID hit, I lost 20%, so I'm just going to put 20% of my price.
Same discussion, same excuse, huh?
Mm.
Like 2 years, what's it been, 3 years? I can't even remember anymore. Because like that, the beauty with me is, you know, I was raised in South Africa, as you know.
Yeah.
And my family, we've had a lot of family trauma and a whole heap of things that we've had to deal with back home. And what you learn at a young age is to put the past in the past. Yeah, you know, like you immediately like, yeah, that hurts, but I don't want to remember it. And that's a very common, I think, a very common trait for people that do come out of Africa, because they do see a lot of that early on. Like, I mean, 6 years old, you're dealing with family trauma. It's very confronting. It's very hard. But your body learns to adapt. And I guess my trait is I forgive real quickly and I forget real quickly, which is, I think it's a good thing, but it's also good. It's good.
Yeah, I don't forget. I do forgive, but I don't forget. It's always going to be.
It's always there. But the long and short of it is, I agree with the sentiment that Peter Ward is putting out there. Like, we are in a place of, a dog in a corner. You know, we just any good opportunities we're snapping at. And they're good opportunities, but we're not really assessing them.
We're not really even snapping at them. We're gouging as well.
Oh, well, right? That's...
So we're saying this is a good opportunity. Let me make it even better.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's...
The percentages are out of whack.
Yeah. And it's like, well, now when I was reading this article and projects going ahead have gone down 33%, why do you think that's the case? Because you see a good opportunity, you decide I can make it even better, and then all of a sudden it doesn't stack. And we're stuck in the same cycle, and no one's making any money out of it.
Nah. The contracts are landing on people's desks, like you say, with the intent to then make hay while the sun shines, as opposed to look at the longevity of the market, look at the business deal that you're in. Remember that you're a person, I'm a person. Forget about the contract. I think I've said this to you a number of times. The contract is there for, hey, like these are the terms and conditions that
it's the rules of engagement.
Correct. But you and I have a relationship, and that relationship should so far supersede that contract that the contract is something that sits in the desk for a long time, and you and I just keep doing what it is that we do, and that's business. Like, if I'm not making new money as my partner in this agreement. Like, and it sounds so blasé, like, because people think, oh, Garen, you're living in this bloody dream world. Like, how can you? But that's business. Like, you do layman's terms. You know, like, we want to talk about layman's terms. If I provide you an apple, right, and I said to you, the apple's $10, and there's a few terms and conditions, like I said, it's a seedless apple, all of a sudden there's one seed. Like, it's not that you come back out of that and go, right, you promised me there's no seeds, there's one seed, that's it. It's like, bro, okay, cool, like, there's one seed, like, instead of it being 10, it's 9. I'm still making money. You're still having a good apple. Like, layman's terms here is the contracts become so like, oh, but it's exactly back to what you were saying. It's risk. Like, oh my God, there's so much risk in this. Like, if there's that much risk, then why are you doing the business? Why are you doing the deal? Why are you in this deal?
Yeah.
Like, the contract's there, and the Australian standards of this contract that is so manipulated and so far-fetched that you get into bed with, you know, who you're going to do the business with, and it turns out that this isn't what we promised or what we discussed, because there's so much there's so many interfering parts in the deal that I think that the deal gets lost, and then, you know, relationships break down, and it goes back to what the original question was, is, you know, why is there so much risk in the market?
Yeah, and it's perspective, right? And going back to the world we're from, I know, and what I've learned in my short life is, if someone wants to screw you,
they will.
They will.
There's no two ways about it.
Right. And it's going to happen, right? Or you're going to have to fight it. You can put as many parameters as you need to, but if they're hell-bent from day one...
To hurt you, they will. Yeah, agree.
Right. So it's... If you're going to, there has to be some sort of good faith when you're going into an agreement, right? An understanding of the common goal.
Yeah.
And I guess in this market, it's what we're talking about, the relationships, the understanding of the scope, the making it clear what the deliverables are. And then hopefully you've got a great project manager like me, who's going to, you know, make sure that the builder is happy, but also the developer is getting what they need. And we're working towards the common goal.
Well, that's right. I'd love the world where, you know, I think it's going to happen. I think there's a lot of young blood coming into the market. I think the young blood is sick and tired of the attitude that the market current or the construction industry currently has.
Yeah.
I think that young blood wants to go back to what business was all about, and that's relationships. Like, I'm young. Like, I'm not sitting here pretending like I know everything. I'm like my dad would call me wet behind the ears. You know, like, I'm still learning my trade. I'm still learning my life. I've got a young family. I'm still trying to learn that. I'm trying to find balance.
Yeah.
You know, the young world that we live in is all about relationships. That's why social media exists. It's because we want to be connected. We want to be valued in our industry. Like, I want to walk into a room where everyone in that room, regardless of who you are and what you've done, I value you. Yeah, like, I don't, the intention is not to sing kumbaya and always have a good time. Like, the intention is that I respect you and value enough to have an argument with you, like a serious argument, but then...
understand that it's an argument.
And move on from it. Like if it ends in that meeting badly, it's a phone call afterwards to say, look, but there is no bad intention there. I just needed to get off my chest. And then the relationship is strong enough where it's like, but I get it. I understand it's frustration. We can work through it, and we're going to work through it.
Yeah.
That's gone. Like, that doesn't, nowadays it's like, you're either talking to someone that's going to help you, or you're talking to someone that just doesn't want to help you. And the person that wants to help you is, like, I find that it's probably like 2 in every 10. Yeah. You're like, what? And that goes back to, you know, the original thing where you're like, there is a labor shortage. There is 100% a labor shortage of good labor. Like, and when I mean labor, I mean administrator. That's contract administrator, project coordinators, project managers, construction managers. Like, I think we need to start re-looking at the way these guys are being mentored and trained. And that comes down to good leaders.
Well, so I'll put it to you then. What are you doing to ensure that you mentor some people?
Yeah, so I've got a few young guys that are like I still mentor. Like I've been through I went through a really good time at my previous company, and there were some really young guns in that company. You could see it, like they were really trying their best to put their hand up to say I'm ready for the next step. When I first got there with their grads, and I made them project coordinators, and through development and training and understanding, the most important thing is it's not understanding. You'll always learn your trade. Like, the more practice you're
not going to know everything.
Correct. But over years and years and years, you'll always learn new and nifty tricks, all right? So my intent was not to train them in that, because they're going to learn that as they go. And everyone needs to learn their own pathway in how they gather information in their trade. My thing was around, like, seeing their weaknesses and going, right, like, you know, one of them is a young guy, like... he wears his heart on his sleeve. He's a go-getter. There's no two ways about it. But I was always trying to not slow him down, but just point him in the direction of, like, but because you are so determined, right, you lose track of that there's people around you that you can lean on to get information to help you in this direction. Yeah. As opposed to just going down this direction and breaking down every door on the way and then realizing you got to the end and, hang on, like, I don't actually know what's going on anymore. You need to allow people close to you. So this is, he's a project coordinator, so he needs to allow his supervisors to, like, this is a site supervisor, to know, hey, mate, we're going to go down this angle. I've got to gather this information. I've got to retract this information. I'm going to feed it to you, and I need you to keep feeding me information on, is this the right path we're going? And he wouldn't, over time, he started to work that out, and he was like, oh, cool. But then you could see the breakdown in communication. You know, like, he wasn't communicating precisely. He was it's just a communication. So I asked him, you know, very politely, obviously, to say about, like, can you go and I just want you to go and develop your skills in people communication. So we got him into an interactive development course with the HR in the business. So he'd sit down and understand HR and the way they communicate and the way they nurture people. So that's just some of the ways, like, I think you need to nurture your young staff.
Yeah, because I'm a firm believer, right, in, well, I like flair, right? I like, you're a rugby fan, so I like the Elton Yankees, I like the Cheslin Kobe's, but the key to it is, I'm a believer in fundamentals first.
Yeah, you gotta get the basics.
You gotta know how to catch the ball. You gotta know how to pass the ball.
Yeah.
You gotta know how to kick the ball, right? You gotta know how to just go through the paces, how to tackle, right? You gotta know how to work through the gap.
But there was that's nurturing.
That's nurturing.
You've played rugby, any sport. Like, if you get a good coach, that coach is gonna invest a lot more. Like, the coach is gonna invest not just time, but emotion. Right, like, people are emotional. Like, it doesn't, if I tell you, like, but I don't like you anymore, you may say, whatever. But something in you is emotionally triggered by that conversation.
Yeah.
Regardless of how well you trained or how good you think you are, like, there is an emotional side to everything, and that is just human nature. So, like, I always believe the nurturing of that individual showing, like, not just showing time, because time is... like, I could spend an hour here and have the worst conversation with you and you go, mate, that was just, what are we doing? But like, if I give you, you know, an hour of my time and I value the time that I have with you, you're gaining a lot and I'm gaining a lot. And that's what I always believe is, I think too many of our leaders in the industry don't spend enough valuable time with their staff and growing their staff. You know, like, they just assume that this young person can immediately pick up what's in their head. It's like, no, but that's not how it works. It's the same thing as with my wife. You know, my wife just assumes that I know what's going on, but there is no chance in the world I know what's going on in her head. But
hi, honey. I didn't say that.
I hope my wife doesn't watch this, right?
Well, so, yeah, because just on that point, like, and the fundamentals.
On the wife point? Or?
No. Okay. I'm not touching that one.
You know her. She'll beat you.
So. Yeah. No.
Round ass kick to the head.
Yep. The fundamentals, right? That's all you can give, right? The rest of it is up to the individual. But if you spend that valuable time that you're talking that's about, true. Valuable time, quality time with the individual, teaching them the just basics,
yes,
right? The flair is up to you, right? If you want to kick a banana kick, you're going to have to stay after practice and practice the banana kick, right? Yeah. If you want to learn how to chip the ball or you want to know how to pass it behind the back, that's something you do in your own time, and that's your own self-drive, but the basics are what
they need to develop.
And it's that quality time. Yeah. Anyway, to close this up, right, because we've been talking for a while. I've actually been enjoying this. I always end with a personal question.
Ooh.
Right. It's I feel we're all human and we get lost in the game of business and careers and where we are. But when we go home and we switch off and we hold our kids, like, that's where we're at our core.
Mm.
Right. So with Garen, the individual.
Yes.
Right. What lessons would you like to leave your kids with?
Bro, you don't make them easy, do you?
No, it's got to be deep. I don't do surface level.
I don't know.
Let's say they're watching this 10 years from now, right? For whatever life reasons, Gaz is not around.
Yeah, like,
what would be the top two lessons?
My thing is to leave it all out there. Whether, like, it started from a young age, like, you know, the phrase that I learned at boarding school was, don't leave a what if. Don't leave the what ifs on the field. Don't leave the what ifs in life. You don't want to get to the end and go, oh, you know, what if I'd done that? And we go back to the topic of, you know, I'm South African and I did lose a lot of friends and a few family members to violence in South Africa, and being faced with that has left me with the thought of, like, every day matters. Like, it does. It matters very much to me. So, you know, time like this, spending with obviously a good friend, and it matters to me because I don't know. Like, the what ifs are the things that scare me the most, but also drive me the most. So I always say, leave it all out there. And then the second part of that question is, and it relates to the first part, is always be yourself. Be true to yourself. I've learned the hard way. You know, like, I do give a lot of my time and a lot of my passion to people that then don't see the value in that. And I've tried to mold myself to then make myself valuable to them, and all I did was self-deprecation. Like, I'm actually hurting myself by doing that. Yep. So I've learned the hard way that, you know, the most important person in my life is me first, because obviously if I'm not well, my kids can see that and so can my wife. Yep. So, you know, the most important thing to me is to be true to myself, and that is part of the what ifs. Like, you know, I don't want to get to, you know, hopefully the success that I'm after, I don't want to get to the end of that and then not know who I am. Like, that's the worst situation. You sit there and go, oh, hang on, I did all this and where am I? Like, is this me? Like, what's going on? So I want to have the values, you know, like, I'm a charitable person. I love, you know, I'm religious as well, as you know, and The most important thing is I don't want to lose all that. I want to be true to myself and show my kids that, hey, it's okay to be vulnerable sometimes. Like, charity is putting yourself into a vulnerable situation because these people are so desperate, and you putting yourself in their shoes to show that desperation and help. And that's, you know, that's what I teach any kid, like, or anyone, or even an adult, like, just, you know, don't leave the what ifs and be true to yourself. And I guarantee the two things will come together pretty well.
That's beautiful.
I appreciate it, bro. I appreciate the question.
That's beautiful. I'll just give one is always keep finding yourself and improving yourself.
Oh, bad, yeah, absolutely.
There's always going to be a better version of you. And do not be afraid to keep breaking yourself down to build yourself up to a better statue or whatever you are.
Well, that's what I love about you, bro. You're an inquisitive person. You know, you're always trying your best to find the new and improved CUDA. Like, it's admirable because it's a hard thing to do.
It's exhausting for some. It's exhausting.
But I love it, bro. I love seeing your growth. And yeah, bro, I think that's an incredible trait. Like, if you can teach people that it's a hard yakka. Like, it's not just like, oh yeah, I learned something new today, I read this book. It's like, yeah, okay, you read the book, but what did you get out of the book and how are you implementing that into your life? Whereas, you know, credit to you, bro, you do read the book and then actually start implementing it into your life, which is admirable. So
yeah, I just try and take bits and pieces of things because there's always something you can learn from anyone. Absolutely. Like, there's something you can learn from a janitor. There's something you can learn from, like, I've grown up in a culture where there's wisdom everywhere around you. Mm-hmm. It's not, the wisdom is not in your career, the wisdom is not in your,
it's in the people,
yeah. It's in the people, right? And everyone's got a perspective and everyone's got a nugget in there that can change your life. So I'll listen and I'll take what applies and discard the rest. But everyone is just as important to me. But Gaza, thanks, mate. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming for Coffee with Kuda.
Loved it, bro.
That was our episode of Coffee with Kuda. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you took a lot out of it. And we'll see you next week for the next one. Thank you.
Thanks, bro.